Well, Jules, another tough one for the Blue Jays. Very close to winning this series yesterday in the 9th, 10th, and 11th. Today, things get away from them as early as the third pitch of the ball game. Oh, boy. And instead of a series win, series loss for the Jays following an 8-3 defeat today at the hands of the Mariners.
Yeah, when you put it like that, all it took was really the third pitch, and you kind of could see how this one was going to go. Tough one for Easton Lucas again. A ton of issues commanding those pitches there. And, you know, not a ton of positives again for the offense here, show, and kind of running out of things to say. I'm afraid I'm going to start getting repetitive here. It's been a problem.
Maybe we can just replay a bunch of Jay's talks we've already done. Honestly, I think that it'll probably serve the same. Just combine yesterday's Jay's talk with the one I did for Easton Lucas's last start.
There you go.
Which was last Monday, I want to say, and then we're good.
Yeah.
I think,
right? That's
you'll get all the same notes.
Struggle with home runs, Rowdy Tellez, and the offense falls short, and it's pretty much, you know, the story that we've kind of seen before, which I can imagine it gets frustrating for fans. Yeah. It's, you know, watching this one, I was certainly hoping for something. There were so many instances in which the bases were loaded, and it seemed like the Blue Jays were actually cooking, and there was something good that was about to happen and just fall short every single time. So, tough way to lose a series, and another very, very tough one coming up against the Houston Astros here.
You're listening to Jay's Talk. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz here with you. We're live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. You know what? Let's get the Easton Lucas discussion out of the way.
Because
I think that I'm not sure there's a lot to say on Lucas. I mean, it was, you know what? It was a fun experiment while it lasted. I'll say that. We'll always have those two Easton Lucas starts to remember.
Yep.
But, boy, I mean, like, third pitch, like I said, Jules, he leaves an 80-mile-an-hour sweeper right over the middle of the plate. Dylan Moore does not miss. Julio Rodriguez, the very next batter, smashes one of the hardest-hit doubles you'll see in the whole series off the wall, and then Cal Raleigh just destroys a slider right down the middle. I mean, none of them were located particularly well. None of them were thrown particularly hard.
That's right.
So there wasn't a lot of positives, if any positives.
No.
Because I think maybe there was a possibility, had he gone a little deeper, you could have said, all right, well, he saved the bullpen a little bit. Didn't even get that. He only got 1 2/3. I mean, I talked about this after his last start, but he let in that start and in this start, he let the first batter of the inning, and I mean, he only started two innings in this game, but he let them both get aboard, and that generally does not, when you let the leadoff batter get on base in some way, shape, or form, and I mean, Dylan Moore got on base in the form of a home run, but that generally speaking does not work out for you, right? And then he walked Ben Williamson to start the second inning, and then doesn't get out of the second after letting in a few more runs. I don't know what happens with Lucas, but gosh, I gotta imagine the leash for a spot starter like him, and we can talk about some of the options that could be in play outside of Lucas, but I got to imagine the leash is pretty short.
Yeah, that seems to be the overall sentiment, show, when you look at the way that the last start went and then this one, just even how short it ended up being, it does seem like the experiment may be over. Obviously, you know, we're not going to be sure of that until we actually hear from the manager, until we actually see the probables for the next couple of series and things along those lines. But you're right, show, when this is a guy who's coming up from AAA to sort of, you know, pitch in place of someone who's hurt and a big name at that, and Max Scherzer, you have to imagine that there isn't a ton of margin for starts like this. And when the Blue Jays are struggling to score runs in the way that they are right now, obviously the pitching matters all the more. And we've seen tremendous pitching performances by this club. There's a reason why the Blue Jays are 12-10 and second in the AL East, and that's in large part because of pitching, and that includes Easton Lucas. But the book is out. There's video now. There is more information on a guy who was relatively unknown prior to this. Gets some success, and teams are going to start to make adjustments. Obviously, there wasn't much adjustment necessary in this one. When you just look at the location on those home runs, the fact that it was breaking balls, it just straight down the middle there, and good hitters are not going to miss that. And you and I spoke pregame about what is it that Lucas kind of had to do to right the ship a little bit. And I mentioned, listen, let them beat you. Don't give them, you know, easy hits, easy homers, easy balls to drive. And that ended up being pretty much exactly what happened in through one and two thirds here for Easton Lucas. Silver lining, Paxton Schultz. Has to be, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he's probably the only real positive story to come out of this game.
I would agree.
But hey, I mean, it is a really positive story. I mean, I'll give the guy all the credit in the world. I mean, one and two thirds from Lucas, you kind of think to yourself, gosh, like this bullpen that just put Sandlin on the IL, I mean, how, what are they going to do here, right? Yeah. How much can you really expect from either Dylan Tate or Paxton Schultz? And Schultz, my goodness, I mean, he comes in here, gets the K on the first batter on his way to 8 strikeouts in relief, which actually ties a major league record for the most strikeouts by a reliever in his major league debut. Yeah. That is incredible.
It is. It is incredible. And I don't know. I got the feeling that Paxton Schultz was a man pitching like he had nothing to lose.
Sure, yeah.
Right? Just really locating that fastball and that cutter, missing bats left, right, and center. I believe it was Chris Black on Twitter who had a stat. Through four appearances, rather, in the minors this season, Paxton Schultz has had 15 whiffs. Today, he had 17, which is just unbelievable. So it really shows you that he was really locating those pitches. There was some velocity to the fastball here and there that puzzled Mariners hitters a little bit. And again, it is kind of a similar story to Easton Lucas, perhaps, in that this is an unknown guy that you're calling up from AAA today. Not a ton of video, not a ton of preparation or game planning, and he just comes in. But the difference was really that Schultz was pitching extremely effectively here, staying in the zone, throwing strikes, and locating those pitches extremely well. And that is the real positive here, Sho, because, again, this bullpen has been taxed. We have seen how much these guys have had to pitch, and we were looking at another one of those today. But because of Schultz, that didn't happen. Now, he deserved better, I believe, on the other end of the ball. He deserved some run support just from what he was able to do. Didn't walk anyone. I think it was 2 or 3 hits that he allowed here. So
2 hits.
Incredible, incredible stuff to save the bullpen and to put the Blue Jays in a little bit of a better position ahead of the a very tough series on the road against the Astros.
Yeah, he went 4 1/3. He allowed 2 hits, no runs, no walks. He had 8 strikeouts against 16 batters faced. Here's actually a pretty incredible stat. He threw 64 pitches, 50 of them were strikes. I mean, that is incredible.
That is really good.
He was just filling up that zone. Now, I do think to like a certain extent, because there's no scouting reports on him video-wise for the opposing team, so they really were like, I don't want to say swinging blindly, but it's like the first time any of these guys, even on the iPads in the dugout, are really seeing anything from Paxton Schultz. Having said that, it cuts both ways because he probably hadn't seen very many, if any, scouting reports. Like this time yesterday, or maybe not this time, but like before first pitch at 1 o'clock p.m. yesterday, he was probably reviewing scouting reports for AAA batters. Not for like Cal Raleigh and Randy Arozarena and Julia Rodriguez. So yeah, I think it is a bit of give and take there when it comes to who's benefiting more, and, you know, batters or pitchers. But undeniable that he looked great. You said it with all the pitches. I thought the change looked good as well. I mean, you want to see him do it more consistently, certainly, but
I think
there is something to work with there going forward, at least as far as trying to find bullpen solution goes. I mean, Swanson and Burr not coming back in the next week, probably. Sandlin still on the IL. Schneider seemed to make it sound like Sandlin's not going to be on the IL for that long. Having said that, you never really know. Right latch strain for Sandlin, landing him on the 15-day IL earlier today. So we'll see. I do kind of wonder, just from a procedural standpoint, I mean, he threw 64 pitches today.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder if he goes back down, like if he gets sent back down, knowing that he's probably not going to pitch over the Houston series. There's an off day on Thursday. And then whatever I forget what the minimum time is when you get sent down, but he sees the minimum time down and then gets called back up. I kind of wonder if you see some of the procedural moves being made when it comes to what Schultz's place on the roster looks like. Even though obviously after today, he absolutely deserves to stay on the major league roster. No doubt.
Yeah, that's an interesting, I guess, theory when you start to think about what the Blue Jays need out of this bullpen and what the Blue Jays need just in general out of its pitching to make through this this road trip and back. But yeah, there's very little argument here that with this specific outing, Schultz has done enough to at least warrant a second look in the big leagues here. Just tremendous stuff. I don't necessarily anticipate that we're going to see him throw as many pitches next time out, or even, you know, when it comes to effectiveness and whatnot. You do this once, teams start to pay attention to you, so we'll see how hitters adjust to Schultz as well. But what a way to start a big league career show.
That's got to feel so good.
It's got to feel good.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Mike in Owen Sound. Mike, what's up? Welcome to J-Stock.
Hey.
Mike, I got you there?
Yep. I'm here.
There you go. Go ahead.
So, first of all, I'm going to establish a couple of salient points here. I'm 65. I've been around a long time, watch the game. I am not a professional. I cannot appreciate the fact of what these guys do, but I watch. And I texted the last couple of days and said, the downfall of the Jays this season is yesterday's loss. Not at the end of the game, but in the early innings, when they didn't take advantage of their opportunities. And this is a structural problem that the Jays have had for the last 5-6 years. They cannot execute.
Hey, yeah, Mike, appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of texts like that on the text line, too. There's one from Jay in Regina, which actually makes me laugh. Jay says, this show should be called Blue Jays Lack of Offense Talk. That's all we've been talking about the last 3 years on this show. I mean, you're not wrong, Jay. And, I mean, Mike from Owen Sound is not wrong either. I mean, there's one here from Jay in Coquitlam in B.C. I actually kind of like this analogy to everyone's point. If this Blue Jays team was a boxer, he would have great defense and only throw jabs with no power punch. We try to win by a judge's decision each night. That's a pretty apt analogy.
That's very good. Yeah.
I like that one. I haven't heard that one before.
And that one uses sort of an analogy that David Pompkins, the Blue Jays hitting coach, has put forth.
Boxing analogy.
Yes, that's right. Shai Davidi writing about it recently. And the idea for the Blue Jays is to mix and match a little bit more than what we're seeing. It just hasn't worked out that way. And you look at 5-for-21 with runners in scoring position, 12 runners left on base, that just won't cut it. It won't cut it against a winning team like the Mariners, and it just won't cut it if you want to be serious about being a playoff team.
Yeah, the offense not being able to drive in runs in important situations yet again is just incredibly frustrating, right? And I don't blame anyone for being frustrated because, I mean, look, in the second inning, Luis Castillo, who, by the way, like, just in a general sense, has not been the same guy who shoved here in the playoffs a couple of years ago. Like, this year, even before this outing, you go back, look at his last outing. I think he played against the Reds the last time out, and his former team, and they really got him.
Yeah.
So I don't sure if it's just age, honestly, because he's getting a little older, but the stuff in terms of velo and command has dipped a little bit with Castillo, and you saw that today, right? I mean, the Blue Jays got 10 hits off Luis Castillo. I mean, the second inning, they get the bases loaded, I think just one out after scoring a few runs already against him, but that's all they get. I mean, the point is, too, it's not that they can't get on base. It's driving in runs, and it's scoring with power, right?
Yeah.
I mean, here's a fun, but really not so fun stat. After Cal Raleigh hit the home run off Lucas in the first inning, that's his 9th home run on the season. The Blue Jays, as a team, have 12 combined home runs after, 22 games? Like, Rowdy Tellez this weekend, Jules, has as many home runs as Bo, Vladdy, and Santander combined all season. Like, good God, Lemon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not looking good. And listen, you can look at that second inning with the bases loaded. I believe it was Andrés Giménez at the plate when Randy Arozarena made that spectacular sliding catch right there to save some runs. And maybe this game looks a lot different if that ball actually finds the turf. But before that, in Jimenez's at bat, we saw him just look at two sliders that landed in the zone. Before him, Anthony Santander just stared at a couple of sliders that landed in the zone. And so when you're talking about the heart of your lineup, the run-producing part of this lineup, and they're really just letting go and just watching really, really good pitches to drive and hit, it causes you to wonder. I understand that Luis Castillo is still a very good pitcher, and a lot of his pitches may look very similar coming out of the hand, but we're not talking about one or two. We're talking about a sequence of pitches. There were good pitches to hit, and there were just not – the Blue Jays couldn't do anything with it. And again, we are talking about your number three and your number four hitters. So that's just not a formula for winning baseball. It was obviously bad luck that Rosarena made that catch and kind of ended the threat right there, but that was far from the only opportunity show. And what we're seeing is repeatedly this inability to cash in on opportunities.
Leslie in Calgary said, best player today, Easter Sunday, was the new kid on the mound, Schultz. Congrats to him, though he probably gets paid the least of any players there. Shame on the other high-paid, experienced ones. He probably does. I think that I want to say your salary is like prorated from when you, in terms of like, if you get sent back down and you don't spend the whole season up in the majors, I think your salary, like in terms of what you get, gets prorated in the sense of when you, how much you play in the majors versus how much you play in the minors. But so that's definitely a positive for Schultz, and you hope he stays up for as long as humanly possible, because probably makes more money. Let's see, there's another one here from Max in East York. What is wrong with Santander? 100 at bats is enough. Hit him fifth. Give him a position with less pressure. Josh from Brampton on the text line. The lack of security in getting big hits will tax the bullpen pitching rotation. I feel that one day this season it'll all come crashing down unless someone, 1 through 9, picks up the slack. Is it too much to ask for just one guy to hit a bomb every now and again? And you know what? It's true. I mean, all I am asking for, I'm not even asking for them to just suddenly hit a bomb every 3 ABs. That's not what I'm asking for, right? That would be nice, though.
Yeah.
But that's not what I'm even asking for. I don't even think that's what fans are asking for. I think you're like they're right now at the bottom of the league in most categories when it comes to power, right? Yep. When it comes to and specifically home runs.
For sure.
I think all people are asking for is like a middle of the pack offense when it comes to home runs. And I mean, for me even, I'm just asking for with runners in scoring positions and less than 2 outs, for the team to swing the bat and score more than 1 run on occasion. I think that's all I'm really asking for. I feel like you could probably, this is not an empirical statement, but I feel like you can probably count on one hand, definitely 2 hands, the amount of times that they've swung the bat and they've scored more than 1 run, essentially.
Right. Yeah, and listen, this is something that, you know, the season is not that young anymore, right? Show at a certain point, you need to look at what's happening, and as much as I also enjoy and think there is value in talking about process and in how, you know, the at-bats are improving and there is hard contact, at a certain point, you actually need the results. Something that stood out to me that John Schneider spoke about today pregame when he met with media on a Sunday, which is rare to talk about the roster moves and things of those lines, is, you know, Nick Sandlin, he mentioned that in addition to the workload that Nick Sandlin has actually seen on the mound, there have also been a lot of situations in which he is called upon in the bullpen, he warms up, he's throwing pitches, and he doesn't come into the game. And that's also a reflection of a lot of close games.
Sure.
When you're having to warm up your high-leverage guys sometimes multiple times in the same game, even if they don't come in, that is also taxing for them. And that is the clear reflex of a lot of close games and low-scoring games for the Blue Jays. So it kind of has a ripple effect. Everything is connected in many ways, Sho. And, yeah, this offense has got to find a way to put the ball in the air with a little bit more consistency. We saw that yesterday, too. Several chances to win the game. All you need to do is put the ball in the air, unable to do it in extra innings. So, yeah, for all the talk about process and for all the talk about improvements and underlying numbers and all of that, there comes a time when you need to look in the mirror and figure out why it is that the process is not actually translating into big hits and big moments and wins on the board.
Janet in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, saying, excuse me, the bullpen is taxed. Sorry, this is the start of the season. These are well-paid athletes. No more excuses, please. And I think, too, a lot of the and I think it's a valid point to have, but I also believe that for me, it's less about saying that it's an excuse that these guys are being used too much, and more that it's just unsustainable. I think for any team, no matter how good your bullpen is, no matter how elite these athletes are, I truly believe it's just unsustainable to ask your and someone had gotten to this already on the text line, but just unsustainable to ask your starting rotation, but also your bullpen to walk a line where you have to hold it within a couple of runs every single game,
right?
Because even if, like, I don't think anyone expects the bullpen to never give up a run for the rest of time. That's just, like, not going to happen, right? But if you have a little bit more of a wiggle room, they can still pitch a lot of, and a lot of the starting rotation members have said this, they could pitch maybe some more less, quote-unquote, stressful innings. And
absolutely.
So far, it feels like literally every inning the bullpen has pitched this season has been a stressful inning. I think that's what it boils down to me. Not that it's necessarily, like, an excuse these guys aren't ready to go, but more just that at some point the dam will break.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that we are here on April 20th.
Yeah, and what we're talking about is the difference between bringing out a Chad Green, a Brandon Little, a Jimmy Garcia, even a Nick Sandlin at times, and bringing out Mason Fluharty or Jacob Barnes or a Dylan Tate, right? These are guys that pitch in very different leverage spots. And the guys that have pitched a lot are the high leverage guys. And that is what we're talking about here. So you put some crooked numbers on the board, you allow the manager and the coaching staff to utilize those arms in the bullpen in a little bit of a more flexible way so that you are not going, so you don't have to go to the same guys every single day. And that is, we have seen Jimmy Garcia pitch a lot. We have seen Brandon Little pitch a lot. So Trevor Hoffman, for sure. So
Jeff Hoffman.
Or, sorry, Jeff Hoffman. What did I say? Trevor
Hoffman.
Oh, God. You know what? I was waiting for the time when I would make that mistake, and it's fitting.
I said Miguel Vargas a number of times yesterday, so I totally get it. Don't worry.
Oh, man, I can't believe it. It finally happened. Well, we got that out of the way, and now we can continue. But so just to finish up the point about the pen, that is basically what we're talking about when we say that these guys have been pitching a lot. Absolutely, they're ready whenever their number is called, but it would be better for the Blue Jays not to have to call upon them as much as they have, especially when you're talking about extra innings. And, you know, there's just been so many close games that that's just what happens to your pen.
Let's hear a little bit from the manager, John Schneider, discussing this very point in terms of off days, taking away off days from a variety of players. Here's the skipper in his postgame availability.
I mean, I think it's like we've been talking about relievers, how they get up and get in, get up, don't get in. You know, I think you want to kind of keep everything moving in the right direction, you know, especially with starters. They're kind of creatures of habit. And if you don't foresee it being a long-term thing, you kind of want to keep them on schedule. So is there a way to do it with, you know, maneuvering it? Yeah, for sure. And I think what we've done a really good job is being in touch with those guys and those guys being honest with us. So it's early, and we're going to need more than just five starters. That's just how the game works. So I don't really know the pros and cons right now. You know, I think a lot of it goes into conversations with the guys, with myself, with Pete, with the medical staff, and you kind of make the best decision.
That's John Schneider talking to the media again about kind of what we're talking about, like the idea of off days and how you juggle the starting rotation, the bullpen certainly as well. By the way, Jules, I was thinking too, we talked about Paxton Schultz earlier, who was the lone bright spot from this loss, but whatever happens with him, whatever happens with Easton Lucas, I will say, I mean, you know, there are a number of ways you can go as well before we hit the break here.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go to Jake Bloss if you really want to. He had a much better start in Buffalo today. I was monitoring that game for the out-of-town scoreboard. He went 4 2/3. He allowed 6 hits, 2 runs, neither of which were earned. No walks, 7 strikeouts. He threw 91 pitches. But at the same time, he had not had a very good start to his season, just period. So I wonder if they shy away from wanting him to be called up right away.
Right.
Maybe you try and get him a couple more good starts in the minors before you bring him up to the majors. You could, if they don't send Schultz down, they want to keep him on the roster, even though he threw 64 pitches today, maybe he opens for Yariel Rodriguez, maybe the next spot through the rotation. You could also just, because there are a couple off days, you could kick this decision down the road a little bit. There's an off day on Thursday, which is the 24th, and then there's another off day on the other side of the weekend, which is the Monday, April 29th. You could just, for this coming series, I think the order is Gausman, Bassett, Francis for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. There's an off day on Thursday, and then you could just roll Berríos on regular rest and skip the turn in the rotation. Like, you could do a variety of things when it comes to finding a creative solution here.
Yeah, and listen, maybe José Berríos is the guy that you want to do that with. Maybe he is the guy that you want to have on the mound on regular rest, and you know, under difficult circumstances, he has been the model of consistency for this rotation. I know he's run into trouble a little bit this season, but you can count on Jose Berríos to be ready to pitch every 5 days. And if the Blue Jays need him to do that, this is also a guy who has shown up many times before in you know, unpredictable situations. So, yeah, I don't see why not. There are certain some different things that you could do here, Sho. The Blue Jays have some flexibility because they have these off days coming in. I would be pretty surprised if they brought up Jake Bloss for the next start, just because it seems like they do want to give him a little bit of an extended look. There were so many issues with weather and things along those lines to start the season in Buffalo, and now that he found his groove, I believe that the Blue Jays will want to see a little bit more of that before we see him in the majors, because we also have to remember that this goes beyond this season. What the Blue Jays are building with a guy like Bloss, a top prospect, someone who is, you know, viewed as a part of the future, it's not just about the month of April. It's not just about this season. So we'll see what the decision is here. I could be very, very wrong, but I would assume that the Blue Jays will want to give Bloss at least a couple more starts in AAA, make sure that he's settled in, and then there's a possibility we'll see him in the major leagues.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. We're here for another 20 minutes or so. You can keep texting us, 590-590, name and location. We'll get to more of your calls, more of your texts on the other side. The Blue Jays dropped the series to the Seattle Mariners following an 8-3 loss in the rubber match. Today they will play the Houston Astros for the first of three at Minute Maid Park starting tomorrow. That is Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. Let's take that break, Jules, and come back with more of your calls, more of your texts, and we'll check in on the Bet365 standings update as well. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Wow. For a guy that came up here in a car this morning and signed his contract, and I mean, that was amazing, you know. We've seen him pitch a couple times, obviously, but he executed really well, you know. Like, you know about his stuff. Saved our bullpen, for one. I mean, those games are tough because we're a little bit thin, and you want to try to get as much out of you can out of Easton, and he really picked us up. But I think all of his pitches were working, kind of sneaky with everything, and that's a day he's going to remember for a long time. That was pretty impressive.
A very impressive Major League debut for Paxton Schultz. 4 1/3, 2 hits, no runs, no walks, 8 strikeouts against a 16 batters face. He was phenomenal today. That's John Schneider talking about Paxton Schultz. As we welcome you back to Jay's Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sho and Julia here with you for another couple minutes. Jules, you know, it's funny, I do the out-of-town scoreboard a lot, and we're going to check in on the Bet365 standings update in a sec here, but I do the out-of-town scoreboard during the games, and so I look at a variety of different things. I feel like over the last couple of years, I have seen P. Schultz in the Bison's box scores all up and down there.
Right.
And it's pretty cool to see his name in the Major League box score with 8 strikeouts and no runs, period. That's very impressive.
Yeah, you look at what he's done with AAA, too, this year, Sho. It looks like a guy who maybe put some things together here. Pretty interesting to think that he was just a player to be named later in a random trade with the Brewers in 2021 that sent Derek Fisher to Milwaukee. Not the flashy prospect, not the guy that, you know, people are checking the stats to see when he is going to be up or anything like that. But you look at what he's done with AAA. First of all, pitching multiple innings on more than one occasion and missing a ton of bats and actually putting together some strikeouts here and some good innings, which is obviously refreshing to see. And more than that, it's now playing a big factor in what we're seeing at the major league level. So it's those unexpected guys. It's those surprises that really make a season and a winning season at that. Now, if the Blue Jays can find some more surprises on the other side of the ball, then they should probably be in a very good position. But you look at Easton Lucas and what he gave them for the first two times he started here. And now you look at Schultz and what he was able to do today. You keep finding those little nuggets of positivity, even though you are down a guy like Max Scherzer or something along those lines. that is when you put yourself in a good position.
Time now for the Bet365 standings update. Download the Bet365 app for today's baseball odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 19+, play responsibly. Ontario only. As with yesterday, this time, all the games in the American League East are now finished. So let's take a quick check of how they went. First of all, Jules, I hadn't realized this is how out of hand this game got, but the Reds beat the Orioles 24-2. That was the final score. What? My goodness, that was a Charlie Morton start. He got hammered. And I think there were some position players that came in late in this one, and the Reds beat up on them. But still, I mean, that is still just ridiculous. I had seen the score earlier when it was like 15-1, so clearly did not get any better for the Orioles.
You know what? You think it's bad, Blue Jays fans? You think things are bad? Take a look at the Baltimore Orioles right now. Please go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's an astonishing score. The White Sox doubled up on the Red Sox 8-4. Actually, I believe when Tanner Houck came out of this game, they were winning 4-2. So the bullpen just completely imploded at Fenway today. So the White Sox getting their fifth win of the year over the Red Sox with an 8-4 win. The Yankees took a Max Fried no-hitter, kind of a bizarre one, into the seventh inning. They beat the Rays 4-0, and then we have our game, 8-3, the Blue Jays lose. But the Yankees take 3-4 from the Rays at Steinbrenner Field, kind of an odd quirk of the schedule because that's their spring training facility. But the Yankees with a 4-0 win. Max Fried had a no-hitter, and the no-hitter was taken away from him because an error was ruled a hit.
Retroactively.
So that's kind of tough for Max Fried, but still, as long a start as a Yankee, went 7 2/3. So with all those scores and all those games done, here's how the standings go right now. The Yankees are 2 games ahead of the Blue Jays. For the division lead, they are 14-8. The Blue Jays are 12-10. The Red Sox, with the loss, are 12-11. So the Jays are still a game ahead of the Red Sox. The Baltimore Orioles are 9-12. And the Rays, even with the win, they are 9-13. So it's, again, a pretty tight division race.
Yeah. You look at the separation that the Yankees are building right now. I think that adds to the frustration of this series here, show. And today's game is what it is. These starts happen. You're not going to see this very often from the Blue Jays rotation, but it does happen, and it happens with pretty much every team, no matter how good or how bad they are. You're going to see sometimes just, you know, crooked numbers on the board and weird ones at that. But yesterday especially was such a winnable game, right? And even today the Blue Jays had legitimate chances to tie it, even though they were off to a pretty big deficit early on. And now the Yankees seem to be putting it all together and actually building some separation in the division. But the Blue Jays could still be closer, even tied really, with the Yankees at this point in the season. So I think that adds a little bit to the frustration of a series like this where there were so many chances and just the Blue Jays unable to capitalize.
Yeah, I think you look at those standings too. The Jays now have lost that positive run differential. They're a minus -3 on the season. 86 runs scored, 89 runs allowed. Now, 89 runs allowed is, you know, still pretty good. Only the Rays have allowed fewer runs with 86, but still, -3 run differential, even though you're 12-10, is probably unsustainable, right? So you need more power. To that end, I wanted to go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. Read a couple more of your texts before we get out of here. Jen, Toronto, saying, thoughts on runners in scoring position is an issue for at least 3 years. Also, what is going on with Santander? Team was coasting on its pitching. Thanks. That's from Jen in Toronto. Jen, thank you. There's another one from, let's see, there was another one I wanted to get to that I was just looking at. Here we go. Paul in Toronto. Last offseason, Atkins shrugged off questions about the lack of power. How's that working out? Jimenez should be hitting 8th or 9th. This team cannot hit when it counts. And there's another one here from Jason in Thornhill, which I think sums this all up. What will it take for Schneider to shake up the Morbin lineup? Great use of that word, Jason. Single after single and no runs. If we can't hit for power, another season will be lost. And I think it's an interesting question, Jules, because I think for me, I am generally in favor of just leaving guys where they are in the order when the offensive output from them in a positive manner is likely unsustainable, right? So, like, for example, like Tyler Heineman. Take Tyler Heineman, for example. I think after today, let me just double check. I think after today he's hitting like 500,
yep.
I want to say.
Yep, he's hitting 500.
Yeah, exactly 500.
It's
so
unbelievable.
That's incredible, right? Yeah. And again, well done for Tyler Heineman. It's like the smallest sample size. So again, much like with Springer, it's probably not going to be that good all season, because that's just how this sport is.
Right.
well done by him, not to take anything away from him. But at this point, like, if the offense, everyone's points in the text line, if the offense is going to consistently struggle like this, it might just be time
to try
something. Just try stuff. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, whether it means moving Santander down a little bit, maybe you move Springer above Jimenez, maybe Jimenez bats a little lower in the order, maybe Heinemann bats a little higher in the order. Again, I understand that some of this stuff is completely unsustainable and it's not going to be the case by the end of the year. And Blair and Barker have said this before, maybe it will take until you see Varsho back in the lineup to know, like, really know what they think of the lineup in terms of people being where. But at the same time, it's just, I know it's early, quote unquote early, but what, 22 games, I guess, at this point now? I think you can still make conclusions after 22 games, and I think we've all arrived at the same conclusion, which is that the offense has been really bad so far.
Right, yeah, that's an easy one, right? Show they don't even need to pay us for that to reach that conclusion, honestly. Because
that's for free.
Yeah, you can take that one for free. But the truth is that we saw, or we heard, a lot of that discourse during spring training and even early on in the season about flexibility, about being creative, about not necessarily trapping guys or strapping guys into a certain spot in the lineup. And then nothing. And then this. I don't believe that, you know, Andrés Giménez was very, very good in that number four spot for early on in the season. He's not where he was right now. Just isn't. The same goes for Bo Bichette. I know that he's been hitting well, but we have seen too many of those leadoff at-bats that just end in a one-pitch pop-out or whatever it may be. That's happening as well. And that has an effect on the rest of your lineup and the way that guys are seeing pitches and the way that guys are responding in the box. It does. So, yeah, maybe you do need to even consider moving Santander from the number three spot with the way that things are going right now. And it's... I don't know if frustrating or disappointing is the right word, but
they're both right.
It's definitely, it leaves me scratching my head to think that we heard so much about flexibility and creativity early on, and now it's just not coming to fruition. I also understand that there is value in sort of keeping guys a little more locked in because they do build a routine and they do build just a rhythm for themselves in with regards to where they're hitting, but when it's been this bad for this long and you just really cannot get over that, then something has got to give. And if these are the pieces that are at your disposal right now, maybe it is time to see if you can just make up a new puzzle with what you have.
Mike in St. John, New Brunswick, since Santander is such a slow starter, kind of what we were talking about, why have him in the third spot when he's been abysmal with runners in scoring position and a liability at the plate so far? The at-bats today were very uncompetitive, fair. Mike in Victoria, B.C., Rowdy has the same amount of home runs in three games as the Jays' top three for the entire season. We were talking about that. I don't want to hear it's early anymore. They have three home runs in 66 man games. So adding up all the games played, that is prorated to 21 home runs total for all three in 162-game season. Again, I do think it'll even out, but it better start evening out real fast. Now, again, 22 games means you got 140 games left. 140 games is a lot of baseball.
Yeah.
But we're also getting dangerously close to that. You know, because I had said maybe you can't make sweeping declarations about the team until you get to May. It's like April 20th. Like, you're basically there, right? Yeah. You're essentially there. Like,
although April is a very long month.
April is a long month. It's true. But, I mean, really, in the month, you essentially have eight more games this month. And it's like, you're going to play in Houston for three of those games. You're going to play in New York for three of those games against the Yankees, a team that's leading the division, a team that's been pretty good so far, all things considered.
Yep.
So six games on the road against two of the better teams in the American League. Then you come back home and play the Red Sox. So you have team. And again, the Red Sox have scuffled a little bit. Don't get me wrong. It's not exactly they're not exactly world beaters, even though they were the trendy pick to win the division. It's just, I think you need more from the offense. I think you've gotten, Easton Lucas aside, some pretty good results from your starting rotation. So it starts tomorrow, certainly, with Gausman. You got Bassett on Tuesday. You got Francis on Wednesday. So it starts certainly with those three guys. But if they got to be as good as they've been all season, essentially, to even give you a chance at this point. So that's what we're looking forward to. Speaking of which, Jules, before we get out of here, you have Jays Talk with a few special guests later this week, first on Wednesday and then on the weekend. I am off for about a week as of Wednesday. I'll just say this. The team is now 2-6 when I do the show and 10-4 when Blair and Barker do it. Now, you have been alongside me for most of those eight games.
Yes.
I think all but two games. So you have a 2-4 record, including today. So I guess we'll see if the team performs better when I'm not here.
That explains a lot, Joe, because I do feel like I'm just repeating myself every time I come on. And just, you know, listening to you lay out those numbers makes sense. I am repeating myself because we tend to get... I guess we're bearing the brunt a little bit of the bad part for the Blue Jays here.
Well, good luck then. Good luck on Wednesday
Thank
and on the weekend.
You. Thank you God very
speed.
Much. I appreciate that. We're going to need it.
That is Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. Blue Jays baseball, as always, is brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Gatineau, Aylmer, and Gatineau Hull. Crown is proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today at your local Crown Rust Control Center or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. For Julia Kreutz, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Austin Mackey, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali, and that does it for us. I'll be around for the next few days for in-game coverage, but again, as of Wednesday, I'm off Jays Talk until May 3rd. I'm headed out of the country for a wedding, not my own, my cousin's wedding. Blair and Barker will handle Jays Talk Monday, Tuesday, Friday. Jules will handle it with a few special guests again on Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday. She will kill it as always. Have a great week, everyone. Have a wonderful Easter Sunday. We'll talk to you later.